HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 50, recorded Wednesday, February 7th, 2007. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl talk about the Microsoft OpenID collaboration.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes from HanselMinutes.com. Hope you're having a good week. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
We haven't really announced on the show, but we're moving the publication date of the shows to Thursday, and we're just a day late today. No big deal.
You know, this is our 50th show.
It is, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. 50 Hansel Minutes shows.
Yeah, and hopefully we haven't run out of anything to say. I mean, one day we'll start talking about our pets, but until then,
we won't. Of course, we don't want to waste people's time. And I think we spent just about enough time on the whole idea of it being the 50th show. So what's the topic today, Scott?
Well, I think that we should talk about OpenID. We've talked a little bit about card space in the past. We've talked about the general concept of identity on a show recently. But given the big announcement yesterday between Microsoft and a whole pile of Web 2.0 companies, I think it's worth talking about what OpenID is and why our users should care, our readers, our listeners should care.
So why don't you start off by just telling us what OpenID is?
Okay, so we know what CardSpace is, right? So to put it in the context of CardSpace, CardSpace is Microsoft's 2.0 attempt at solving a lot of the problems around identity, and they're trying to do it in a very very open way. So they're using the WS Star protocols.
Right, they're trying to solve the whole idea of identity across the network, across the internet for everybody, not just for Microsoft users.
Right. Except the thing that you use to log in, the thing that you use to express who you are and what you know and all the different things about identity in the CardSpace and Vista world is a Microsoft thing. It's called an identity selector. So the big curtain of gray that comes over the screen as it pops up and says, give me your CardSpace card. That's a Microsoft thing. Now there are, as we talked about in a previous show, identity selectors for other platforms. There's a Java-based one. Firefox 3 has announced in their functional requirements document that they're going to have an identity selector of their own. Now, this is all good and wonderful, but kind of simultaneously going on in the background, there are lots of other people concerned about the problem of identity. The problem of phishing, where you don't know where you're going, you don't know where you're visiting, and then the problem of farming, P-H-A-R-M, farming, which is where user-sensitive information is being logged. This is like having a keylogger on your machine and you don't know your password's being typed.
And let's
not
forget email spam, which is all related to identity.
Absolutely. And some of the things that are important about identity, what they call the laws of identity, are things like user control and consent, right? You only want to reveal information with the user's consent.
Right.
You want to disclose the least possible amount of information that you need. And people need to have a what's called a justifiable party. You need to make sure that the disclosure of information is really limited to those parties that are justifiable, that really have a need to know. Justifiable parties is the third law. It could be called the need to know law.
Mm-hmm.
Need to talk about directed identity, about private entities and public entities, and things like that. And we need to make sure we have a consistent experience for everyone.
Kim Cameron is one of the guys at Microsoft who's really blazed the trail for identity, especially for CardSpace.
Yeah, definitely on the Microsoft side, he is the man. He's the face of identity at Microsoft. So OpenID is an open framework as well, decentralized, and it basically introduces the idea of a URI, which is an old idea, right? Not a URL, but a URI.
URI is a uniform resource identifier, which is what a URL is. So a URL is a subset of a URI. URI is the general idea of having a protocol and a colon and what else, but URL is a HTTP construct.
Exactly, exactly. So typically when you log in somewhere, of course, you use your username and your password. And unfortunately, a lot of people have the same password duplicated everywhere. So if someone got a hold of one of my passwords, now, you know, personally, I use a different password for every site, but I've got a tool that helps make that possible. But if I was using Foo for my password everywhere and someone found that out, they could log in to Amazon and use my password. They could log into Newegg and use my password. And I couldn't change it in one location. Now, Passport was the Microsoft, hey, handle your identity through us. We'll right. handle it for you. OpenID could almost be called open and decentralized Passport, in that no one can necessarily control this. You take control of your own identity. And what they do is they take the concept of a URI and they expand it to a user-centric identity or identifier.
So in other words, your username is a URI.
Right. And what's the most common URI that people have? They have their website.
Right.
So your website address, like Hanselman.com, can then become your URI because that's something that you have. You actually own that.
And that's a really important thing to just double mention, because when I think of a URI being an identity, I think of, like, you know, the addresses and identifiers we used to use for remoting and for, you know, COM and all sorts of crazy long URLs that are cryptic. But you're right. I mean, your blog, your website, and because you own it, that represents you.
Absolutely.
And it's also very easy to, when it is your website, to go there and make sure that it is you.
So if you want to use your blog, like I'm sure many of our listeners either have a blog or have a website that they control, maybe it's somewhere that they put their family pictures, and they want to use that domain as their OpenID, it's pretty straightforward, actually. You can just go to Hanselman.com and do a view source and look right in the meta tags there for two different links. You'll see links that point to an OpenID server, because my system isn't necessarily an OpenID provider.
Yeah.
But I want to use the URI. I want to use my URI, Hanselman.com. So what I do is I put links in my blog's HTML that point to who's handling, who I'm delegating this work to. So what you do is you go to myopenid.com and you sign up for an OpenID. So I did that because OpenID.com is an OpenID provider. And then I just point from the source code of the HTML of my website, and this is really easy, even if you have a blog address and you don't necessarily control the domain, you can add this to your blog's template. It doesn't show up, it's not seen by anyone. And then this is the way of saying, oh, here's his provider. In the to use the passport metaphor, if there was more than one passport.com out there, I would be able to possibly use my website address as my passport, and passport would just be kind of a party that I would, a relaying party.
Let's get back to this whole idea of the provider. Is the provider the thing that verifies and validates your identity?
Good point. Okay, let's get back to that. So if you're going to log in to an OpenID-enabled website, a website that's gone to the effort of doing this this integration, which isn't very complicated, you would then type in your OpenID URI. So I could go to a blog, like I think that Simon Wilson is a guy who's got a blog, and I think we've got a Shrinkster URI for him. So I could go to his blog at shrinkster.com/LU4, and he explains how OpenID works. And I could leave a comment there or log into his blog, and there's a spot for entering in my OpenID. So this is my username. Now, even though he may not have ever heard of me before, right, I'm not necessarily making an account on his system in the classic username and password sense. A lot of times we want to enable a server or an application for something like identity.
So his website is going to go to where your website tells him to validate, and that'll give him a yes or no?
No. So I enter in my OpenID URI, mm-hmm. and then his website redirects me to the OpenID provider that is listed. So he goes and he says, his library, his OpenID library, fetches my website, finds that link at the top and looks at it, and then says, I see, we're going to parse this HTML content, see the tag for OpenID server, And then it's going to communicate with that server because I've just redirected him to, in this case, the MyOpenID website. I'm going to then log in to that website. This is why I use the kind of the passport metaphor, but I don't want anyone to think that this is the next version of passport. It was just an example. But I'm giving my secret, right, my password at this point, to the centralized OpenID provider.
So the provider is the guy who keeps your password. Is there a password involved?
Yeah, this is the trick. So there's nothing about OpenID that says there has to be a password. Certainly, this is part of what, and we'll get to this when we talk about how they integrated with CardSpace, because I'll be able to log into an OpenID provider and give them a card at some point. Or I could give them there's nothing about OpenID that says I couldn't use a smart card or some other secret. But I have been redirected to the OpenID server, and it is to them that I need to prove that it's me. Right, I have an account with those guys. In this case, I'll give them my name and my password. I don't need to give them my name, actually, because the consumer let them know that.
Okay.
Now, the server and the person who wants my information have negotiated a one-time shared secret. And then I get logged in, and I actually get a warning from the OpenID provider that says, such and such a website, you know, Simon's website, is requesting your information. He wants your email address or whatever other bit of profile.
You say, I get this warning. Who's me? Who's I? And how does it come to you?
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, so I'm a guy who wants to log into a website. I go to an OpenID-enabled website like Simon's blog. I put in my OpenID. In the background, his blog parses that HTML, figures out who the server is, gets a shared secret temporarily with that server. Then he actually redirects in the browser. So I've actually redirected to another website in the browser that is my OpenID provider.
Okay.
I log into my OpenID provider. And because enough context has been sent over to that provider, he can then go, all right, I see that it's you. Here's someone who's requesting information from you. Is this okay?
So you get a dialogue box from the browser?
I get just a web page in the browser. This is all done in HTML. There's nothing about OpenID that requires JavaScript.
Okay.
So then I'm being told by this particular implementation of the OpenID server, do you want to allow this once or allow it forever? Right, allow it forever would be the way of saying, I want to auto log into this guy's website just by giving him my name if I'm logged in and I want to remember my password.
Okay.
Then the consumer gets redirected to the server. So the server then redirects back and then it checks to see, did anyone tamper with things? Is there that shared secret, is that still legit? So there is some backwards chatter going on in the background. It's not an entirely client-side.
Okay.
Because the client can store state. You can store things like cookies. Now, there is an alternative state called the dumb mode that
Well, before
skips.
We get too ahead of yourself, I just want to make sure, I want to get the consumer experience from this. So
yeah.
Basically what I'm going to do is when I go to log into somebody's weblog, I have to paste in my URL. So it should be pretty short, right?
Well, you just type in your URL, whatever your URL is.
You type
it
in or you paste it in or you whatever you do, you type it in. So then you're redirected to another website that says, hey, this website wants to do such and such and so and so. Will you allow them? Yes or no? You go, yes. And then you're effectively rerouted back or redirected back to the place that you wanted to log into. So
right.
Is it that seamless?
It really is. Like if I go to, like you can try this and follow with me, even though you don't have an OpenID. We'll go to jyte.com, Jyte with a Y. And it's just a little Web 2.0 kind of cutesy am I hot or not type site. It's a little social site. In the upper corner, it says sign in with OpenID. So I click on that and notice the big text box has an OpenID icon in it. It's kind of a orange and gray icon. That's the kind of the standard way. It's a little overlay that lives in the text box, a standard way of saying I support OpenID.
Okay.
You can go ahead and try this, Carl. I'm going to type in Hanselman.com in my OpenID. You go ahead and do the same thing, www.hanselman.com.
I'm actually not at a computer, so.
Oh, okay. So I'm doing that. I hit sign in. And now in the back, I've just been redirected to my OpenID. And I look in my URL, and there's a shared secret. It's a big, long, complicated thing. And it looks like a typical, you know, passport or Google accounts kind of really complicated URL thing that's been passed in. And it says, you must log in to authenticate as Scott Hanselman. So my OpenID, this free OpenID server, you can go and get one of these yourself.
So yeah, that's the missing thing, is somewhere you have to put in a password.
Right.
Obviously.
So now I'm, if you look at my URL, I'm on a secure site for OpenID on myopenid.com. And again, there will be many, and there are many OpenID servers. My OpenID is just the one that everyone's using right now. So now I logged in, it says, all right, it says, the site identifying itself as Jite.com has asked us for confirmation that this is your identity, Earl. I have the choice, and this is actually just in HTML on the MyOpenID site, allow forever, allow once, or deny.
Okay.
So I'm just going to say allow once. Now I'm looking, and now I've been redirected back to Jite.com, and they've negotiated back and forth, and it says, hello, Hanselman.com.
Yeah.
Because that's all it knows about me.
But, and this is a good segue to this, obviously you can store more than just your identity, your password. You can store
exactly
pieces of your address and your all that other stuff that you like to fill in when you order
right
stuff from Amazon.
So you can
or
actually have what's called personas. And this is one of the neat things. You can have multiple personas. And this is really up to the implementation of the OpenID server. So on the MyOpenID site, I can go in and I can say, here's my default persona. And then I could say, but this is different from my public persona, right? I might want to, I mean, if I'm a person, if you, maybe you just want to be Carl F and you don't want to spread yourself around as Carl Franklin, you could do that. You could have, you could basically have multiple personalities and sign in for some things as one person and other things as another.
Yeah.
And then you can go back to the OpenID site and see, I'm clicking on sites and I can see the 12 OpenID sites that I have trusted. I can see how many times that I've approved that site, and I can also deny them. So I could actually go back and say, well, I'm not going to allow Jite.com. I'm going to remove that from the list now. So I have a complete list, and then it says, if I want to allow them explicitly, they actually won't prompt me if I'm already logged in. They'll automatically send confirmation of my identity to these sites. So it really puts you into control. It's a lot like what CardSpace intends to do, but it's all done in the browser. It doesn't have anything to do with any kind of client-side stuff. So, of course, as such, and not requiring any JavaScript or anything, it's very friendly. If someone wanted to do Ajax implementations of sign-in and stuff, it doesn't care. It's very open in the way that it does things.
Yeah. And, I can't help but my mind is wondering, how can this work for not just a web identity, but for, spam and phishing and all of those other kinds of things. How does it apply to those problems?
Okay, well, spam is a larger problem, but there is a thing called an XRI, which is a new kind of internet identifier. An XRI is an extensible resource identifier, and an I name is something that is a kind of an XRI. Like if you go to my blog and you, underneath my face, it says contact me and it says equals Scott.Hanselman. So equals Scott.Hanselman is my I name. It's a unique identifier that represents me. And
now,
in the next...
unique to what? The world?
And unique to the universe, exactly.
Okay. You think you're the only Scott Hanselman in the world?
No. Now, there are I names and then there are I numbers.
So my flip question there gets to the question. The real question is, how do you pick one without making sure, while making sure it's unique?
Well, they handle the uniqueness, but I mean, a good question is, am I the only person that has Hanselman.com?
Yes.
Yes. Does that suck for the other Hanselmans in the world? Yes, it does. I give them email if they ask.
But when you picked it, did something validate the fact that it was available?
In this case, the people at the iName provider, in this case, just like when you decide to get a there's a directory, right?
User,
just like DNS.
If you're a username on a particular site, okay,
right.
I get it.
Okay, so that these in this case XRIs are also backward compatible with IP addresses and DNSs, DNS addressing rather. So you could actually use your IP address as your iName.
How neat.
See what I'm saying? So if you don't want to, I could just use Hanselman.com and that could be my XRI as well. Now, you can use your iName as an OpenID identifier and then they'll automatically do resolution of that. This is going to be an OpenID version 2, although there are a few implementations of 1.1 that'll do this. So this will mean that if I'm not necessarily an individual who wants to have a website, or I don't want to use my website as my my identifier for some reason, I could use an XRI. Now, I got my my iName from a company called 2IDI, 2IDI, the number 2IDI .com. And mm-hmm. I use this to prevent spam because it basically gives me a form that people can have to fill out rather than emailing me.
Mm-hmm.
And it it proves that they are a person by doing the whole send them an email and then they have to click on a link. And it identifies they're at least, if they are a bot, they're a clever enough bot that could actually do all that work for me. I haven't gotten any spam through it yet. So the point is, though, that they're trying to have ways for people to have these unique identifiers. And yes, there are more than one Scott Hanselman, so there's no way to solve that problem.
Right.
But, you know, I am the only, in this case, person with Hanselman.com and the only person with an equal Scott.Hanselman.
Sure.
So those can be used as my identifiers. So then I don't have to go and pick a username in all these different places, you know, theoretically ever again, right?
Okay.
Now, on the how do I identify myself back to the OpenID server, that's really up to that implementation of the server. And again, the OpenID spec doesn't necessarily say that it has to be a password. So what they've announced is a cooperation between the Cardspace team and the OpenID kind of group of people, because it's many, many people working on this kind of thing.
I was going to say, I mean, Cardspace overlaps a little bit in OpenID, does it not?
Yeah, OpenID could sit by itself, but there is some concern that you could do a phishing attack by faking out an OpenID provider. So they could redirect me to a bad guy, and then I might type my password in.
Right.
Integrating Cardspace with OpenID gives you kind of the best of both worlds. You get the Cardspace UI, the flexibility of being able to export your cards. It's more cryptographically significant on the client side. Future versions of Cardspace will include things like smart cards and, you know, rotating tokens and stuff.
Yeah.
But OpenID is flexible enough that people will be able to use it and they may not necessarily have Cardspace on their system.
Mm-hmm.
So by them collaborating, it allows identity 2.0 to happen regardless.
Yeah. Because
Cardspace is a brilliant idea. But to be clear, Cardspace is just an implementation of this concept called information cards.
Yeah.
And there will be many implementations. Cardspace will just be the one that's the most ubiquitous.
So tell us a little bit about this announcement that Bill Gates made at the RSA conference about supporting OpenID.
Right. So it's a big conference that's going on actually right now. I think it'll be done Friday in San Francisco. And we've actually got some people down there working the Microsoft booth. Stuart Solaria is down there giving demos on how to do Cardspace banking integration, which is something that we do
cool.
at Carillion. There's about 15,000 people down there. And they basically announced a partnership between Microsoft, companies like Janrain, Skip, and VeriSign to integrate and interoperate between Cardspace and OpenID. Okay?
Wow, that's huge.
It is huge. And it's huge because it shows that this is such a big problem. There's really not as much time for bickering as there was in the past. And I think that Microsoft is starting to recognize when a good idea happens and it's not Microsoft's idea, that they should still get excited about it and get behind it.
Yeah, amen to
that, OpenID
is
a good idea. Yeah. So Microsoft obviously recognizes that OpenID is going to be huge. And Kim Cameron is very pragmatic, right? He's the chief architect of identity.
Right.
So they're going to work with the community and integrate OpenID support in any of the Microsoft identity server products. And they're going to make it what's called using information cards with OpenID profile. So if I wanted to make a website, I really wanted to support, you know, either of these options. I want someone to come to my site and be able to log in with an OpenID, with an XRI, with a Cardspace. I want it to just work.
Yeah.
I don't want to store passwords on my site. I mean, imagine, think about that. You want to sit down tomorrow and make a site to log in. Username, password. These aren't things that we really want to be in the business of doing.
Right.
I want to store a unique identifier for this individual. I might want to ask him for information about himself, like his name and his first name, his last name, and his email address. And I want to be able to retrieve that in such a way that it is secure, and I'm not going to necessarily store his secrets. Now, it's a couple different things there. Each time he logs in, I can retrieve those claims, those bits of information, like his first name and his last name, from the identity provider. So I don't even technically have to store his first name and last name if I don't want to.
Right.
Because that's a claim about who he is, right? I can store this unique identifier.
It also takes the heat off of you as a website owner, right now currently is storing personal information in your database. You know, you're liable for that information if it gets out.
Right, exactly. Now, of course, having it centralized like this, of course, there's all sorts of anti-phishing things that they can go and add, like this, you know, safe sign-in where you could have them show a picture of yourself. So if you visited a site and somehow you got phished and you didn't see that picture of yourself, then you might say, oh, well, I'm possibly getting phished. People are also talking about creating a whitelist. So I could go and rather than if someone stole some information and somehow was able to start pretending to be me, I could go and say, I'm only going to share my information with these sites, blacklist everybody else.
Well, don't you do that every time, anytime you log in? Don't you do that? I mean, the provider should have a list of the sites that you've logged into.
Yeah, they do have a site, but right now they'll prompt you if you want to. They'll say this new site is deciding to ask you about something about yourself. Do you want to allow that? And you can allow or disallow.
Oh, okay, sure.
With a whitelist, you'd actually just automatically disallow.
I see.
Now, there's also some cool stuff going on. All the different Web 2.0 companies are getting behind this. Like, have you ever done claiming your blog on Technorati?
You know, like Technorati? I looked at that and it looked a little bit complex and I just said, nah.
Yeah. So claiming your blog, Technorati is a website that keeps track of all the technical folks that are blogging. And
it's like a Google search for blogs.
Yeah. And it also keeps track of the interrelationships between those things.
Right.
And when you make a profile on Technorati, you have to claim your blog. Basically, they need you to put a little bit of HTML in your blog so then they can visit it and prove that you are the guy who really owns that URL.
Right.
So someone else can't go and claim Hansman.com. They're integrating OpenID services, so you'll be able to claim your blog by giving your OpenID. Because if you could log in, then obviously you own that. You own
now,
that URL.
Now, what is the
right?
benefit, and it's a side tangent, I know, but what's the benefit of claiming your blog for Technorati?
Oh, that's totally a tangent. It just allows you to put a picture up and say that this is my blog. Go in and manage your ranking and different stuff like that. I don't pay any attention to that, to Technorati.
Yeah.
But my point was that this is an example of a Web 2.0 company who had an existing concept of identity, and they wanted to prove that someone owned something.
Sure.
And they invented a way to do it. Yeah, here, put some HTML in your blog and we'll trust that it's really you. Like, go make a post, put the word poop in it, and then, hey, look, he posted. So he must own the blog.
Right.
That was a weird little dance that you had to do with this particular Web 2.0 company. Mm. But with OpenID, that had an identity solution that was just obvious. So it makes a lot of sense that they would just say, oh, we'll use OpenID. That's exactly the problem that we're trying to solve. So there's a really great screencast. I know this is not a very easy thing to talk about when you're doing it over audio like we are. Simon Willison has got a great screencast. That is up at shrinkster/LU3. If you look at one link in this whole show, just go to shrinkster/LU3 because it explains to you how to use OpenID. And then he has a link there called How to Turn Your Blog into an OpenID. Mm. So I think that the call to action for everyone is to go add these two lines of code to your blog, sign up with a myopenid.com, and then turn your blog into an OpenID. And then kind of take a look around, practice logging in, and then we'll do a show about how to actually integrate with OpenID because there's a lot of really interesting things going on around that.
Yeah, that sounds good.
For example, a company has made a plugin to Apache that basically it's like you know how in IIS we've got forms authentication and basic auth and Windows integrated auth.
Yeah,
they made a module for Apache that just boom poof it's automatically OpenID
wow,
enabled.
Wow, nice.
So I always do this. I think that I'll get the time to do that. I'll write an HTTP module, a forms auth module for OpenID.
Yeah.
So I'll declare here that I'll try. And then probably 2 days from now, someone smarter than me will have already pulled it off.
That's the way it goes, though.
But But, you know, creating something like that, like an authentication module for OpenID would be pretty awesome. And that's the kind of integration I think we're going to see. So the Apache guys have already got that pluggable auth module. It makes it really, really easy. We're adding it to DOS blog. I talked to a couple of guys that have said, yeah, when I get time, I'll get around to doing it. You know, Kevin Hammond already did the integration with CardSpace for DOS blog. So I think more and more you're going to see, at the very least, in the short term, this will be a great way to associate your identity with an OpenID for the purpose of leaving a blog comment, right? That's the obvious thing, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever gone to a blog and wanted to leave a comment, and then they said, oh, go ahead and log in?
No.
Go ahead and make a new ID?
No.
I think Rory's blog did this, didn't it?
No, I don't remember that. No, I know that they use the Chopska or whatever the heck it's called.
CAPTCHA.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a couple of times in the last week where I've really wanted to leave a comment somewhere. Engadget is another example. Engadget's really popular blog.
Oh, yeah,
blog.
Yeah, that's
and then they
right.
want me to create a profile.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, you know, there's a limit to the kind of site that I'm going to go and create a profile on, and I'm certainly not going to.
Yeah, some of those bigger sites, I've had that experience, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, for example, I just, I'm logging into a WordPress blog. WordPress is a real popular blog system. And it says, well, you can log in as a WordPress user with your username or password, or your OpenID identity. So then I'm getting to my OpenID site again, and it actually says select a persona, and then it's saying they would like to know my nickname and my full name and my email address.
Huh.
At this point, I could just decide to deny and say I'm not going to give them this access, but they've actually said, well, your nickname, we'd like that, but your full name is optional.
Huh.
So I'm like, well, that's cool. So I'm only going to give them my email address, and I'm only going to allow it once. And now I'm logged into this WordPress blog. It really puts people in control of their stuff, control of their identity.
Yeah.
It actually makes me want to run around to a bunch of different websites and just delete my information.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Start cleaning up your identity online, because, you know, I've got so many different accounts, probably 50 or 60. I mean, just of all the different places that you've ever visited.
You know, there is a benefit to having all those accounts and all those passwords, and that is if one of them gets compromised, the rest don't get compromised.
Yeah, totally.
You know, having anything in one place is that much more, has to be that much more secure in order for the world not to fall on your head.
Well, there's a lot of really good resources out there. Just search for OpenID on Google with one word. OpenID is one word. We've put a collection of links up on the site. There's some really good PHP libraries for OpenID.
OpenID.net, I believe, is one of the home bases for OpenID.
And there's a couple of .net libraries as well. I haven't personally looked at them, although one person has created a guy named Andrew Arnott, I didn't put this link up, has created an OpenID control. So it's just a drop the control on the page, and it enables that for OpenID.
Oh, wow.
So I haven't looked at that control personally. There's Ruby implementations of this.
Well, we'll add a link to it anyway.
Yeah, we'll add a link. So there's lots of different ways to get involved in this, and I think that we're going to see it becoming easier and easier. Now, a control, and from an ASP.NET perspective, is definitely maybe a little different than I would do things. I might want an HTTP module. But if you go up to openidenabled.com, that is kind of the all things OpenID. You can get Python, .NET libraries. The .NET version is just a port of the OpenID stuff.
All right, Scott. Well, that's a show. It's been a good one. I can't wait to dive into OpenID a little bit more. Thanks for whetting our appetite, as always.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see you next week on Hanselmanics.